Hi, y'all. We're home base. I'm Katrina Ward. I use she, they pronouns. I live between Lexington, Kentucky and Oklahoma City right now. I am a researcher and organizer.
Hi, y'all. I'm Nicole McAfee. I use they, them, or they and she pronouns. In my day job, I am the executive director of a 2S LGBTQ plus advocacy organization, Freedom Oklahoma, based in Oklahoma City, and passionate about abolition.
Hi, I'm JoBeth Hammond. I use she, her pronouns, and I am a city councilor for Ward 6 in Oklahoma City and have a general interest in abolition and building stronger, safer communities.
Hi, y'all. I'm Nate Ward, and I am a creative director at an agency in Edmond, and I came to this space via participation in organizing and past efforts in Oklahoma City, and I'm really excited to be here, and I use they, them pronouns.
Hey, y'all. This is Aurelius Francisco. I use he, him, his pronouns. I'm from the east side of Oklahoma City. I'm the co-executive director and co-founder of Foundation for Liberating Minds. I'm an organizer, very passionate about abolition and education. So I'm very excited about this project and to be in conversation with these lovely folks.
In this episode, we introduce Homebase, our reading group, home team, and we talk about the books we read and what this is going to look like, and play a very fun mini game.
Okay. What's up, guys? Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Home Team podcast, a podcast of Home Base. This is Aurelius talking to you. Want to give a little introduction to what Homebase is. We are a research, information, and organizing hub working to collectively reject Oklahoma and specifically Oklahoma County and Oklahoma City's carceral systems and carceral state, and to build community safety, to build communities of flourishing, vibrant, colorful spaces and hubs where people can live their lives with plenty resources and with care and less policing and confinement that is currently sort of ruling our lives. And so we have three main campaigns that we are running, working on, building, and that this podcast is sort of building on top of and another medium for us to continue to discuss. And so those campaigns are No New Jail Oklahoma, which we've been organizing around the Oklahoma County Jail since 2022. And that is ongoing work to reduce the harm of the jail, reduce the number of beds, deconstruct the connection between the Behavioral Health Center and the new jail and beyond. We have the People's Budget Coalition, which is working to win a participatory budget at Oklahoma City. We want a more resident-driven process where community members across Oklahoma City can really engage with the budget process and talk about what our major needs are, removed from what currently a few select people in the city manager's office and very powerful people, wealthy folks, get to decide what the priorities are for our city. And we know how that marginalizes underserved and underrepresented people and communities already. And then we have Oklahomans for Privacy, which is also a collective working, focusing on Oklahoma City's real-time information center, flock cameras, automatic license plate readers, basically all of the ways that our city is watching us, surveilling us, keeping us under their watchful eye at all times. And we are working towards dismantling that and also sort of building awareness around how surveillance is also a part of this carceral state, because oftentimes we just think about policing in jails and we don't think about the cameras and the surveillance arm of all of this around how the state is controlling our day-to-day lives. So,
okay, so why a podcast? We decided to come to you through a podcast because this is a great way to share information and start a conversation with the community about the organizing that we're doing and the things that matter to us sort of writ large as a community. And it's a great way to bring out updates quickly and accessibly. And so what will we focus on in this podcast? I mean, honestly, it will take different forms. It will evolve over time. Had we been doing this podcast when the jail fight began, there definitely would have been lots of episodes then about, you know, the particulars of what's going on in that fight. The first little chapter of this, if you will, like whether that's a season or an iteration or whatever it will be really closely tied to the reading group that we're starting. So we're starting a reading group called Home Team that is going to be focused on critical readings in the space of our organizing. And we'll be having conversations with related parties, maybe authors, who knows. We'll keep you up to date on that. But as well as sort of breaking down some of those readings for people who are participating in that group and might not have time to engage as fully as they want to, etc. So that'll be the first iteration of this podcast, but you can trust that it will take many forms throughout its existence.
To get into the actual reading group, we're going to read a lot of books over the next couple of months. We have two tracks for this reading group, and you can participate in one or the other or both of them. The first track is about the Black radical tradition and the incredible radical thought that is developed out of that lineage. And then we have a group of readings about the carceral state, which is broad enough to incorporate, you know, kind of the foundation of incarceration and policing up to very relevant fights about jails and things. We'll be meeting on Zoom at 3 p.m. Central, 4 p.m. Eastern, starting June 1st. The first meeting for the Black radical tradition is on June 1st. The first meeting for the carceral state is June 8th. And then we meet about every other week if you do both tracks. If you do just one track, it will be one meeting a month, so one book a month. As we go along, we will have quick intro podcasts for each book so that you can get kind of a general overview. We'll also have supplementary materials that will allow for you to dig in if you really like what the book is about. There will be some additional readings, and those will also help with understanding of the book, including we'll be publishing some notes from us about the book and a set of reading questions that can help guide you as you read and think about all of this incredible work that's been done. We are also going to have kind of a different flavor of podcast with some special guests that Nate kind of hinted at. And those will kind of put the books in conversation with each other as we go along.
As you start to look through a reading list around our reading groups, it might look a little overwhelming week to week. There's some academic books. Some of them are very long. Some of them are very dense. And we want to engage in that in a way that is as accessible to as many people as possible. And so first and foremost, while this reading is complementary to each other, you don't have to attend every reading group. You don't have to attend from the start. If you learn about the reading groups partway through, feel free to jump in where and how you can. We also know that there are things that come up in life and maybe you don't get to read the whole book, and that shouldn't be a barrier to joining the space and engaging in the conversation, learning alongside folks. So if you can't read the whole book, maybe you start with the introduction and conclusion. Maybe you find some chapters in there that really speak to you and dig into just a few of those so that you take away something that feels meaningful to you, and then you can add to that knowledge from what other folks were able to dig into in the book. So we really think of this as a reading group and a conversation space more than just a book club, because we want you to engage in the reading in a way that is accessible to you, that fits within your schedule, and that makes space to say, like, hey, this was hard, or this was a little dense and I had a hard time getting through this, so that we can take away big ideas from what the academics have presented us and also relate that to the real world organizing work that we're all doing.
I think that we should all talk about what success looks like for us in this, both for ourselves and for other people.
Well, I'll kick it off happily. For me, success looks like finishing my first book of the year. Ideally a couple. And more sincerely, like I hope to be able to obviously learn. I mean, I think that's the point of engaging with something like this. I want to be able to learn about the ideas and the frameworks that are presented via these different books to sort of be able to elevate the way that we're able to talk about a lot of these issues that we're already sort of working around together, but with a shared framework and a shared language, it should be empowering.
To me, success looks like lots of different folks engaging, experienced organizers, to very young folks or younger organizers who are maybe just getting involved and just engaging with these ideas and these concepts and discussing it with the group, I think will prove to be a really successful reading group. And I also just think like even folks, I think about like folks who are like fully in the camp of abolition and folks who are like more on the criminal justice reform side of things and are critical of the system, but also like, we need a couple jails and prisons. I really hope those folks will engage as well, just out of curiosity, right? To be willing to ask the question, to read these books critically, not as some like sacred biblical text, as like all-knowing authors or words on a page, but rather to ask the critical questions of the group and for us to have those conversations and that dialogue, I think will be really fruitful for me to hopefully bring more people into these campaigns and into this project.
Yeah, and I can kind of add to that. I think so much of that sounds as so much of what I think success looks like, particularly just I think that so often we're in spaces that just assume, yeah, just like assume that we are all sort of on the same page. And in organizing spaces. And so being able to actually go past, like, we showed up for an action or we're in a meeting trying to like organize, like going and advocating somewhere, but actually being able to really dig in and like understand one another's values and visions. And I think more, yeah, like critically engage with what is it that we're working towards and not just, you know, we're organizing around the specific to push back against something in particular, but actually really like getting to know one another on a deeper level so that when we are in those spaces of like meet calls to action or you know, creating a campaign or goals around a specific issue, that people kind of across the spectrum of like, yeah, I'm all down with abolition or I'm curious, but I don't know anything or feel like I don't know anything, can have more language and, yeah, just, I think relationship around engaging these ideas and feeling like we're kind of like sharpening one another's, vision of what we're actually working towards in our community.
I think so often I think of the ways that lack of shared language can be a barrier, and the ways that it's used, especially in academic spaces, as sort of a way to gatekeep folks, and the ways that that is sometimes like repeated and co-opted in organizing spaces. And so I think that this is a really incredible opportunity to give folks some shared language and frameworks to question what we mean when we say a thing, and to also just spend some really intentional time with hopefully a growing group of people who are expanding what it looks like to get involved. I think for me, success is that this is a new entry point for people who haven't engaged with abolition before or haven't engaged in organizing before to really kind of build those connections. And I think on a personal level too, I'm excited in that success looks like a chance to really prioritize reading some of the materials on this list that have been in my TBR pile for a while and don't always get pushed to the top, maybe because they're a little longer or a little heavier, and that it feels exciting to dig into them knowing I'll get to talk through them with folks.
I think a big part of this is that we're going to have support to talk through some of these like more difficult texts and some of the like complicated ideas. And I think that in itself, creating that space is a success. And I think part of what these these books, this set of books, does is help us remember that the prison is not a thing that just has existed forever. It was created for very specific reasons under specific sets of circumstances. And the Black radical tradition gives us ways to resist that. And studying the carceral state helps us understand what that looks like. So with that being said, let's talk about the actual books we're reading. On the Black radical tradition track, we have Are Prisons Obsolete by Angela Y. Davis. Then we're reading What is Anti-Racism and Why It Means Anti-Capitalism by Arun Kundani. Then we're reading Black Jacobins by C.L.R. James, which is about Toussaint Louverture and the San Domingo Revolution. We're reading An Afro-Indigenous History of the United States by Kyle T. Mays, which is especially important to think about in Oklahoma, where our overlaps are between Black and Indigenous folks. Then we're reading Black Marxism, The Making of the Black Radical Tradition by Cedric Robinson. And then our last book on the Black Radical Tradition is a book that changed my life, Development Arrested by Clyde Woods. And the subtitle of this is The Blues in Plantation Power in the Mississippi Delta. And if you're a music fan, there's a lot of stuff in here for you. On the carceral state track, we're starting with The Jail is Everywhere, which is edited by Jack Norton, Lydia Palo Hobbs, and Judah Shept. Then we're reading Progressive Punishment, which is by Judah Shept, which is about the development of a new jail in Indiana that looks a lot like the arguments that have been made about our jail here in Oklahoma City. Then we're reading a classic, Golden Gulag by Ruth Wilson Gilmore. Then we're reading another classic, Policing the Crisis, Mugging the State and Law and Order by Stuart Hall, Chaz Critcher, Tony Jefferson, John Clark, and Brian Roberts. It's a very good one. Then we're reading another book that changed my life, The London Hanged by Peter Linebaugh. And we're finishing up The Carceral State with Tip of the Spear by Orsamini Burton, which we're all very, very excited about. You can get most of these books at the library in Oklahoma City. We are working on trying to get the rest of them in there. We will also be providing PDFs for those of y'all who are good with reading on a computer. And you can get all of them secondhand on places like eBay. If you're going to buy a new copy, we recommend bookshop.org and not buying from Amazon.
I'm very excited about this book club because I'm a nerd and I appreciate Katrina's nerdiness in organizing this and her love of books and all of these texts, and also like the thoughtfulness of sort of creating the tracks. Lots of discussions went into the frequency and all that good stuff. So I'm excited for folks to dig in and hopefully appreciate all of these books. But I'm also like most excited for the study part of what we talk about a lot around studying and struggling, and that the fight that we're pushing for towards freedom is a struggle. It's a constant struggle. Angela Davis tells us that. But it's really, really important to, as we are struggling, as we are fighting for these campaigns and we're talking with elected officials, or we're knocking doors and we're organizing our community, or we're creating brave and safe spaces for marginalized folks and young people, that we are also studying, that we are also thinking about theory, that we are dissecting concepts and ideas from people who have been doing this work, from people who have particular sort of contexts that are relevant to us here in Oklahoma, and to do both of those things. I think at times, especially in organizing spaces and like in mobilizing times of mobilization, we're constantly like, we got to put our feet on the pavement and get to work. We got to show up. We got to make sure they hear us. We got to activate. We have to protest. And there's not a lot of time to sit and reflect, which I think the study part of study and struggle really allows us to do. And it is that sort of both and, not a dichotomy or an either or proposition, but that we have to do both. And I think this aspect gives this project gives an entry point for people to over their summer months, right? Summer reading, like we used to do as kids, to engage with that theory and that studying, as we are also continuing to practice and continuing to struggle and take action. So I'm really excited to just sit down and read, and also read some books that like I haven't read, also on my like to be read or on my, I have some app, I forget, reading list. It's a reading list app, and it's like a crazy long list of, and like several of these books have been on there. So I'm excited to like have a reason to be like, all right, sit down, knock it out, and really just learn more as I'm doing this work. So very excited.
I think I'm most excited about the personal pan pizza at the end.
I did not know about this.
Dead. This is a surprise. Jo Beth has surprised us with this.
I want my little bucket pin to fill in with the stars as we complete the books.
And what Jo Beth means is that each of us on our own time and on our own dollar can go out and get our own personal pan pizza.
From whatever establishment brings you the most joy.
Yeah.
To Aurelius's point about summer reading group, I am excited to see if I can get a mug from the library after I finish this reading group. But I'll add to that. I read a lot of Katrina. So Katrina is my partner, for those of you who don't know. And I read a lot of Katrina's papers for school. And so I see a lot of these texts referenced in those papers and in Katrina's like dissertation proposal, et cetera. And I don't have the deeper framework other than what I've read in other papers or whatever citations or quotes are there. So I'm excited both to learn about this, like personally, in terms of how it helps me show up in home-based spaces, but also how it helps me show up as a partner and engaging with this work. So it's kind of twofold for me, and I'm really pumped about it.
Oh, I'll put an all sound effect on that. That was
cool. In the like where this meets day-to-day life in organizing, I'm especially excited about an Afro-Indigenous history of the United States. One of the things that I have grappled a lot in the like post-McGirt landscape in Oklahoma is the fact that that relief was only granted to folks who are, per the federal definition, Indian by blood and does not recognize freedmen citizens, even those who already have full citizenship within their tribes. And so I think that context is something I'm excited to dig into together with some folks and to have some additional reading framework around that too. Also, Katrina gave me, I think for my birthday, a copy of The London Hanged that has been chilling on my bedside table in my TBR space, and excited to have a good reason to like really dig into that.
Yeah, if I love you, you're getting a book from me as a present at some point.
The London Hanged being the book for a birthday present, like that's awesome.
It's mutual, if that makes it better. Like, yeah. We're both like, here's something that changed my life. And it's also really intense.
Yeah. So I'm in grad school, as Nate kind of alluded to, working on a PhD about Oklahoma's carceral state. So this is somewhat self-indulgent for me to like be able to be in this kind of pseudo-academic space with all of y'all. It's a joy for me to be in a nerdy reading space. But I think that the importance for me of reading these books, and for me getting to return to a lot of them, is that they provide us with tangible strategies for how to organize in Oklahoma. And I think we just have a lot to learn. And I also think that doing this kind of work, frankly, can be quite depressing because we lose a lot of fights. And I think it's really important that we know that people have been struggling and fighting these kind of fights for a long ass time. And that we're not alone in this, and that we're going to keep fighting. So it's a way to build hope. We all need a little bit of hope.
I will say the book I'm most excited about for sure is Tip of the Spear. That's the one that, like, when I was in grad school in Chicago, it was like there was a lot of promo on it, just on like the Twitter sphere side of Abolition Twitter Hours on, that like this is coming out. I believe it was a special anniversary specifically when I was in grad school of the Attica Revolt. And so it was like this history is about to come out around, you know, theorizing around Attica and how its sort of legacies continue. So I'm very, very excited about that one, as well as like the entire Black radical tradition side. There are books on here that I've read, some that I haven't. So excited to dig into that and going to challenge myself to do both sides. But we'll see if that happens.
I'm most excited for us to read The Jill Is Everywhere and also Progressive Punishment, because I think that they are really directly applicable to the jail fight as it stands. And I think they have a lot to offer us in terms of what we do next.
I'm going to take a different angle and go for a very basic one in there. Where basic is the wrong word, but foundational. Let's use the word foundational. Golden Gulag is a book that I hear everyone talk about. I hear everyone reference. I know that it's like day one of doing this work type of text, but I honestly haven't read it. And so I'm really excited to engage with that and understand why it is such a foundational text in this space more deeply than already knowing that Ruth Wilson Gilmore is GOAT, to use Gen Z slang. But yeah, definitely really excited.
I love that we've collectively, I think, picked almost every book on the
every
list.
Single book. That's what I was just like, yeah, I'm just sort of excited for all of it, that it's hard for me to like pick one particular thing, but
I could have said any of these books, because a lot of them honestly like have made me cry while reading them in a way that, you know, sometimes it hits you in ways that you don't expect. I think the book on here that's given me the most hope is The London Hanged, because it's so much about like a world where this sort of carceral turn is just, I mean, it's not the carceral turn. People mean different things when they say that, but it's this moment right before prison is the answer to all of the social problems. And so I think it's really useful in remembering and knowing concretely that like the world didn't always look like this and it doesn't have to. So that's our reading group. We hope that you join us. We hope that you love these books as much as we do, and follow along. There'll be lots of opportunities for you to engage with all of this.
We're going to take a quick break here and we're going to come back with a mini game.
So if you're listening to this in May of 2025, we are currently in the middle of the Oklahoma City Council budget hearings. We've had a few so far and are heading towards the final presentations, including the police department's budget on May 27th, where they'll present what they are proposing for their next year's fiscal budget. And they really do get the most out of any other department in the city from the general fund, in addition to having some dedicated taxes that are solely go towards their operations. And this is the budget hearings are an opportunity to speak to the council and have your voice heard about what you want to see the city spending its money on. So you can always come to those budget hearings. Like I said, this next one is May 27th at 8:30 a.m. at City Hall at 200 North Walker on the third floor. You have to enter from the south side of the building and sign in, and then you'll go up to the third floor and you can sign up to speak on any item. The final vote is currently projected to on the budget is currently projected to be June 3rd. There's a little wiggle room, but usually it happens on the date that we set it. And yeah, I just say that the other opportunity to sort of make your voice heard on the city budget every year, but this year in particular, and the timeline is through the vision.okc.gov website. You can actually go on there, and if you aren't able to be in there in person or don't feel comfortable showing up. You can submit your comments on the budget through that website, and it gets collated and organized and given to the city council prior to our vote on the 3rd. So this is just, you know, one point in time to provide that feedback and that that input, because we don't as a city have a very public process for crafting the city budget and really rethinking how we want to be spending our dollars to actually create real community resources and thriving in our neighborhoods.
And we're back with a mini game. This week's mini game is called I've Lived Here Long Enough to Know. And the way this game will work is I'm going to give you a fact about Oklahoma City. And the fact may or may not contain some erroneous information. And if you think that fact contains some erroneous information, you're going to buzz in. Our contestants all have buzzers. You're going to say, I've lived here long enough to know that, and correct the information. Mm. Now, there are no bonus points for using like an Oklahoma accent imitation while saying this, but it is encouraged. Have a little fun, you know, poking fun itself. But if you feel that the answer is completely correct, you can buzz in and say, I've lived here long enough to know that that is completely true. And if it is completely true, you will be rewarded 2 points. But if it is incorrect that it is completely true, you will have a point taken away from you. The Honorable JoBeth Hammond is keeping score for us today while also participating. And it's not a conflict because it's been disclosed. So
exactly.
You can optionally choose to recuse yourself from the game, but it's not required. Just a little municipal humor there.
wonderful.
Okay,
so be not present for this vote.
Without further ado, let's jump in. I'm resetting the buzzer. Everyone, you can buzz in at any point during the question. If you feel like you know the answer, go ahead and buzz in as soon as you're ready. But if you buzz in, you have to give an answer.
What's the prize if we win?
My deepest respect and admiration and one personal pan pizza.
Personal pan pizza. All right. Bet. Competitive.
You'll get to be like the reigning champion the next time we play a mini game. So really the prizes, they're just stacking up.
Let's do it.
Okay. Without further ado, question number one. On November 10th, 1941, the Oklahoma Capitol in Oklahoma City acquired a groundbreaking modern sculpture named Petunia.
Has anybody buzzed in?
Ding, ding, ding. I've lived here long enough to know that I don't think there's a modern sculpture at the Capitol.
You are correct. You have identified the part of it that is erroneous. It is not a modern sculpture per se. If anyone can tell us exactly what it is, they will steal the point. Otherwise, that is going to Katrina.
Well, hang on. It is named Petunia?
It is named Petunia.
No, is it the thing on the top?
No Googling. It is not the thing on the top. 3, 2.
Was it a capital dog?
Was not a capital dog.
Is it the oil derrick?
It is, in fact, the oil derrick.
You're joking.
It has Petunia a
number
name.
One.
Hate that so much.
Petunia, that is.
Deeply hate
okay,
that.
So. That's 1 point for Katrina.
Wow. Okay.
How did you find that out?
I can Google with the best of them. Okay. Question number two. In 1952, an earthquake near El Reno damaged the walls and ceilings inside the Capitol building. One crack caused by the earthquake measured at 5 meters. That's over 16 feet.
Yeehaw.
Nicole.
I've lived here long enough to know that they wouldn't measure anything in meters.
I mean, that is true, but not what we were looking for precisely. Aurelius.
I was going to say, I've lived here long enough to know that the state capitol wasn't in whatever city you said at that time.
Actually, it was in Oklahoma City at that time. But so the earthquake was in El Reno, but it reverberated, you know, out to the capitol.
So that's not it.
I'm so sorry.
Could you repeat the statement again, please?
Yeah, I'm repeating it one more time. In 1952, an earthquake near El Reno damaged the walls and ceilings inside the Capitol. One crack caused by the earthquake measured 5 meters, over 16 feet.
I've lived here long enough to know that it was 5 inches.
Mm, So you have identified the part of it that is incorrect.
Okay, I'm buzzing back in.
I'm going to reset the buzzers if anyone wants to steal. Aurelius.
I've lived here long enough to know that the meters, that many meters isn't that many feet. I don't know.
Oh, no. Jobeth is closer. I'm going to give 3 more seconds for someone to steal.
I don't know.
Okay, that point goes to Jobeth. So I've lived here long enough to know that that crack was actually 15 meters or nearly 50 feet. Whoa. That feels like a really big crack to me.
That's not a crack anymore. It's the hell mouth has opened.
That's a split.
Damn.
Also, where?
Yeah.
I don't have that much information in my note. Okay, good job, Jobeth. Moving on to number 3. Oklahoma City was named the manliest city in the U.S. by Combo Snack Foods in 2012. Aurelius.
I've lived here long enough to know that Oklahoma City wasn't named, has never been named the manliest city.
That's incorrect. I'm sorry.
Yeehaw.
Nicole?
I've lived here long enough to know that's correct.
2 points to Nicole.
Wow.
That is completely true.
That's terrible.
Wow.
I don't know why it's true, and I kind of wish I didn't know that it was true.
But Combo Snack Foods?
Yeah, we are the manliest city according to Combo Snack Foods in 2012.
What do they make?
They make combos.
Combos.
What is that?
Which ones?
They have like little pizza flavored sort of pretzel adjacent things.
Oh, those things. I ate those. I ate those back in the day.
I haven't thought about those in like at least 20 years.
Yeah. That was my brother's favorite snack at Belle Isle Middle School, actually.
Okay, so great work, Nicole. That's the way to stack up points in this game.
It's just
moving on to question number 4. I'm a particular fan of this question. Rumble the Bison has an elaborate backstory. Growing up in the Arbuckle Mountains, it said that he was helping friends escape a terrible storm when he was rendered unconscious by a basketball that had been picked up in the violent winds.
What?
Okay, so Joe Beth.
I've lived here long enough to know that that is correct.
Ooh, I'm so sorry, but that is a point away from Joe Beth.
Oh, I forgot that you get a point taken.
Ding, ding, ding.
Katrina.
I've lived here long enough to know that I think it probably wasn't a basketball and maybe it was like lightning or something.
That is completely accurate. I was gonna take the point away if you said anything else, because if anyone's watched Actually, the game that this game is loosely based upon, oftentimes the best strategy is to stop talking right away. But it was in fact lightning.
Wow.
So that is 1 point to Katrina. I'm gonna read the full quote about Rumble's backstory from the NBA website for you now.
Also, I would just like it on the record that I am the least knowledgeable person about basketball of all of us.
Well, apparently it's me.
I will say, Aurelius does have an actual sports podcast.
Yeah. I should have got that one. I'm sorry, Rumble.
Okay, so a little bit of reading for you here. Here's the actual excerpt from the NBA website. The bolt did not destroy him, but by the power of God and thunder, changed him. Suddenly, he walked on 2 legs like a man. He possessed amazing strength and agility. He could jump higher, run faster, think more clearly than any beast. What? But because he was no longer just a bison, and yet not a man, he was alone. With many sightings, the legend grew throughout the years of a mighty bison with remarkable powers roaming the hills alone. Not until a group of men who carried similar powers came to Oklahoma City, did he find somewhere he belonged?
I don't like this anymore.
This is on the NBA website?
These men also possessed power to jump higher, run faster, and perform acrobatic dunks more spectacular than anyone in the land. They too carried the roar of the thunder every time they took the court.
I see.
Who?
That was extra.
And does every mascot have similar lore?
I couldn't tell you yet, but I should be able to tell you by the next time we play this game.
I do feel like if someone had the skills, they should make a not yet a bison, not a man. What is like Britney Spears parody?
Not a girl, not yet a woman. Yeah,
like send that to Weird Al and have him do like a thunder related.
I'm here for this.
I cannot believe
the most jarring.
I cannot believe that exists in the world.
hey, we're all a little bit luckier for it. Moving us on to question number five. Oklahoma City produced its share of famous people, including Blake Griffin, Olivia Munn, Elizabeth Warren, Mickey Mantle, Sweet Brown, and Ralph Ellison.
Yeehaw!
I've lived here long enough to know that Olivia Munn is from Norman and not Oklahoma City.
Ooh, I don't believe that's accurate. Maybe it's accurate.
Accurate. I'm pretty sure that's accurate.
Nicole said, I know where Olivia's from.
Nicole's really lived here long enough to know.
I'm going to keep it real. It says born Oklahoma City.
Oh, okay.
That is just on Google. So, but that is not what we were looking for either way.
Say the names again, please.
Yeah.
Okay. So Oklahoma City has produced its fair share of famous people, including Blake Griffin, Olivia Munn, Elizabeth Warren, Mickey Mantle, Sweet Brown, and Ralph Ellison.
Who's Sweet Brown?
Ain't nobody got time for that.
Wait, I'm buzzing in.
Okay. Aurelius?
I feel like I've lived here long enough to know that Sweet Brown was not born in Oklahoma.
I'm so sorry, but Sweet Brown was born in Oklahoma City.
Did that happen here?
That did indeed happen here.
Seriously?
No, I thought that happened in Baltimore or something.
Well, that was right here.
That's okay, awesome.
Anyone else got a guess? Katrina.
This is risky. I've lived here long enough to know that that is correct.
I'm so sorry, Katrina.
No! That's
from Katrina.
Which one's wrong?
In fact, wrapping it up, the answer is Mickey Mantle is not from Oklahoma.
You're joking! The whole baseball park is named after Mickey Mantle.
He is from Commerce, Oklahoma.
Oh.
I thought you just said Oklahoma, not Oklahoma City.
The question is, Oklahoma City has produced its share of famous people.
I feel like
Blake Griffin.
Answer. I feel like Nicole's answer is the most correct because produced versus born in, because I do believe Olivia Munn grew up in Norman. So Norman really produced her.
You know, I'm going to give this technicality to Nicole just because of...
I feel like we should all get a point for that.
I think I should definitely not get 2 points taken away from me.
I love the communal spirit with which JoBeth approached making sure Nicole gets points while keeping score. That's the kind of integrity we look for in a city council person. Mm. 1 point to Nicole. Everyone else fight me later.
I know Blake Griffin went to school like Edmund.
That sounds right.
But you said produce, so.
This is the most divisive question I've written.
Also, Mickey Mantle was apparently born in Spavinaw. Just grew up in Commerce getting into the weeds here. So yeah. It feels like maybe
he's
really
good at
pulling apart.
Excuse me. Someone's coming at me next for Elizabeth Warren from the village.
in your writing of questions, or else we're not going to be satisfied.
Y'all, I'm not going to lie. Also, feel free to fact check us.
Y'all, I'm not going to lie. I wrote this in 45 minutes this morning.
You can email your complaints to Grant O'Brien at
So true. Okay, moving on. The fastest wind speed ever recorded on the planet was in Moore, Oklahoma, at 318 miles per hour during the Oklahoma City F5 tornado of 1999. JoBeth.
I've lived here long enough to know that it was actually during the tornado in 2014.
That is incorrect. I'm sorry. Aurelius.
I've lived here long enough to know that that's true. I'm swinging for the fences.
2 points to Aurelius.
Dang it.
That is 2 points on the board. Okay.
Thank you. Finally. Jeez.
Moving on to question number 7. Oklahoma City residents get hungry, which is convenient because Oklahoma is the only state to have a full state meal. A Brahms bacon double quarter pounder with fries, ketchup, and a chocolate chip shake.
Yeehaw.
Nicole.
I've lived here long enough to know that the state meal is not a Brahms meal, that it is a chicken fried steak and includes several other items.
If anyone can name all of the items, I'll let you steal the point, but it's basically an impossible task, and I'm going to give Nicole the point otherwise.
It's a lot of things.
It's so much food.
Yeah, like sweet tea and some more stuff. No,
I know there's mashed potatoes.
I think watermelon is on there.
Yeah.
Okay, are y'all ready?
Corn.
I've lived here long enough to know that the Oklahoma State meal is barbecued pork, chicken fried steak, oh my God, sausage with biscuits and gravy, fried okra, squash, grits, corn, black-eyed peas, cornbread, wow, strawberries, and pecan pie.
Just listing all the foods.
Yeah, everything.
Anything that could possibly come from Oklahoma.
I just want to like fully circle back to the fact that the other 49 states have a state food. And we have a state meal.
That's incredible.
All of those things.
You would, it makes more sense though if you've ever had to hear the legislature talk about state anything. Like anytime they consider a bill for, like there was a state horse bill a few years ago that came up time and time again. And it was like, should it be the American Quarter Horse because that was some child's favorite? Or should it be the Choctaw Pony? And so then it was like, do we need an official state pony in addition to the state horse? And so after incredible listening to that, I can absolutely understand how we ended up with a meal.
Yeah, that makes sense.
To that, I say nay. And moving on. Question 8. Oklahoma City is home to world-class institutions, including the Banjo Museum, the Firefighters Museum, the Pigeon Museum, the Railway Museum, and the Toy and Action Figure Museum.
I've lived here long enough to know that the Toy and Action Figure Museum is actually in Seminole.
Oh, you were so close. You have identified what is incorrect about it, and I will give it to you if anyone can tell me where the Toy and Action Figure Museum is.
Is it in Purcell?
Anyone else? Any other guesses?
Yeah, no.
It's on 35 South.
I'm giving the point to Joe Beth. It's in Paul's Valley.
Paul's Valley. 35 South.
To our scorekeeper, drum roll, please. Joe Beth, who is the winner of this game?
Nicole! Woo!
Boo!
Well, thank you all for playing. This was fun. And thank you all, listeners, for tuning in. This has been... Everyone say it with me.
Home team!